Hey friends, thank you so very much for tuning in to the SGT Report podcast. I think you're really going to enjoy this one. Before we start, just a quick word about our sponsor. For years now, people have been setting up a little contest between crypto and gold, but that's like comparing a truck with an SUV. Both carry stuff and travel from A to B, but they do different jobs. Gold's job is to keep the value of your money safe and preserve its value. And since the events in Ukraine and the oil and inflation crisis, gold has done a brilliant job compared to stocks and other investments. So if you're worried about what's going on right now, and who isn't, just talk to an expert at Noble Gold about precious metals IRAs for your retirement. They'll get you straightened out on your options and hold your hand through the entire process. And this month, for any qualified IRA, you'll get an incredible 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin completely free as a thank you. Call 877-646-5347 right now to find out more, or visit noblegoldinvestments.com.
It was 1933, wasn't it, when Franklin Delano Roosevelt had his first inaugural address. And if you read his first inaugural address, you will see that he actually does mention clearinghouse certificates. And what he's doing is he's selling all of the municipal employees into slavery to the Pope. And these clearinghouse certificates are being used to securitize their names and estates. And over time, they simply expanded this to include anybody who got a social security number.
Hey friends, welcome back. Sean from SGT Report here. That was Anna Von Reitz, and we have a fantastic roundtable here for you. Steve Soha, Paul Peterson, James Tracy, and Anna Von Reitz. If you're really serious about knowing how to restore the Republic and your freedom, you need to put some effort into knowing how our freedoms have been robbed from us by fraud, lack of full disclosure, deception, threat, duress, coercion, and intimidation every day of our lives. For over 100 years, by the criminals who have hijacked our government, our wealth, and our heritage for their own gain and evil intentions. I just read that from Anna Von Reitz's website, and it's all true. And one more note, I split this into two parts because, well, you'll see how part one ends, and that's all my fault. So stay tuned for part two. Before we begin, just a quick word about our sponsor. Did you know you can earn hundreds of thousands of dollars investing in crypto? And did you know if you do it right, you don't have to pay capital gains tax on it? Open a Roth crypto IRA right now with My Digital Money to take advantage of it. And when you go to retire, you will pay nothing on your capital gains. If Ethereum, Chainlink, or Solana doubles, or Bitcoin surges to a new high, you could be doubling your investments. My Digital Money's U.S.-based phone support is always ready to answer your questions. And you know what's better? They will give you a free $50 credit if you fund your My Digital Money crypto IRA account with at least $1,000. That's right, no capital gains tax. Go to MyDigitalMoney.com right now, MyDigitalMoney.com. Hey friends, thanks so much for tuning in. It's Sean from SGT Report here. Look, as you all know, I'm no fan of the IRS, but I'm even less of a fan of this criminal government, which has turned its back on the people. And I'm not even sure at this point we have a government. We certainly don't have one by and for the people. What is happening in Washington, D.C.? What happened to our nation? We're going to talk about the history of what happened to our nation, the corporate government, and so much more on this call. I want to welcome to the show my guests, and I'm woefully unprepared for this many fantastic guests. I didn't know Anna Von Reitz would be on today, but here she is. Anna, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you, Sean.
Well, welcome back. We did speak once or twice in the past, and I'm still trying to get my brain wrapped around all of the stuff we're going to talk about in this conversation. Now, Paul Peterson from the Michigan Assembly is the one that sent Anna the invite today. So, Paul, thanks for that and welcome.
You're welcome, and thanks for having me back.
Well, it's my pleasure. And James the Patriot, that's what his name is over on Telegram, James Tracy. Now, I don't know you, but I think you were invited by who? By Steve?
I was. Yeah, Steve sent me an invite. Steve and I have worked together. He's a great, great individual that met me in Ohio when I've been out there to speak before. So,
all right. Well, this should be a lot of fun. And Steve is on the line, too. That's Steve Soha. And he's the brain behind the surety bonds, which Mickey Klahn and so many others have run with to try to rein in these out of control school boards and others. I don't think it's just limited to school boards, but Steve, you and I did that interview about surety bonds, and then others ran with it and had some success reining in these tyrannical school boards. How are you, Steve?
Not too bad, Sean. Yeah, we got some success right off the bat, but then it kind of fizzled out. So maybe we can help some people regain some traction with that today.
Well, flush that out. What do you mean it fizzled out? Help us understand. And do you have any other information or updates about the surety bonds or maybe other angles you've discovered to rein these tyrants in?
Well, there's one I don't really want to talk about because I haven't vetted it out yet, but it's something a couple of us here in Ohio are working on that anybody's going to be able to do, but it is using the court system. And that was one thing that I think we lacked on talking about in our first interview. I didn't bring up the fact that we were going to do this in court, that that's how we were going to go after the surety bonds. We were going to sue them. And I think that's the one aspect a lot of people miss out on. They want to stay out of court. And while James is going to say the same thing I am, that's not the way. I think the courts are the way, and we can force them to work how they're supposed to work. And that's the great thing about the American system, that it is there for us, and we just need to learn how to use it properly.
Well said. All right. Well, right off the bat, I'm confused. Anna, maybe you can weigh in on this. You know, when I've had Christopher James on from A Warrior Calls, he says we need to stay out of their courts. Okay. Their maritime law does not apply to us. And he asks three questions. Number one, do you claim I am your property? Well, no, they can't claim that. So the second question is, do I have a contract with you? They say no. Then the third statement really is, well, we're done here. If I don't have a contract with you and I'm not your property, then you can't force masks on me or any of the rest of your tyranny. Anna, what do you make of what Steve just said about using their courts against them?
Well, you can play it inside the box or outside the box. You just have to know where you are and what sort of position you're standing in. It's possible to win in their courts using their laws against them. We regularly do that, but we do that as a law firm because Joe Average typically doesn't have the background and insight to do that. You know, they go into those courts and they get mashed because it's a full court press and there are actually three enemies in the courtroom. And most people only think that the judge is important, but it's not the judge. It's the clerk and it's the recording secretary. And then it's the prosecuting attorney. The judge is actually just there to be the mouthpiece for the operation and to, you know, deliver the final sentence after all of the other stuff has gone on. So I always tell people, don't focus on the judge, focus on the clerk and the prosecuting attorney, because at the end of the day, it's the prosecuting attorney that's bringing this to your door. And they have to be the ones that actually come forward and prove the jurisdiction of the court, prove the nature and identity of the defendants being addressed, and, you know, show that this is a public record event and not some sort of backdoor meeting of the Bar Association, which it typically is. So, you know, I don't have a problem if people are U.S. citizens and they're going after them in their own courts and using their own laws against them. But I often see situations where, you know, I could easily explain why the surety bonds are not working overall. And that's because in many, many places and instances, they don't bond their officers. They don't have to because they're not working in a public capacity. And the law about bonding applies to people that are working in a public capacity, a public office. So most of their offices are no longer bonded. What they're doing is they're quote unquote self-insuring. And they have risk management officers whose entire job it is to act as basically an insurance agent who gets to call out whether or not you have any standing to bring a claim or not. And if you don't have standing to bring a claim because you are an officer of the corporation, an employee of the corporation, or a dependent of the corporation, then guess what? You get no money and the people perpetuating these crimes against you get no reprimand. And certainly that should happen, but it doesn't, because you have no standing to bring, as an employee, dependent, or officer of a corporation, you do not have any standing to bring a complaint against it. Now, if you were standing in the position of a shareholder of that corporation, or you were standing in the position of a donor to a trust, then you would have a standing to come forward and bring a complaint. But most of the time, people don't hold them feet first to the fire, so none of that even becomes operant. Most of the time, people don't ask them the key questions. And, you know, your friend Christopher James provided a very good, solid means of responding to these people, to just exempt yourself from the situation. But oftentimes that does not solve the problem, because even though you get to walk out of the court free and clear, they have your person, your alter ego, your estate, or some other aspect of your property assets under a position of seizure or arrest. And what's going to happen is that the judge is going to go ahead and administer your estate for you. And the attorney, the prosecuting attorney, is going to come forward as the beneficiary of your estate. And whether you know it or not, they're going to make off with $25,000 of your estate funds per misdemeanor and $1 million or more per felony charge. And they're going to split that between themselves and have a great time at your expense. You know, you may walk out of the court, but your estate is going to take it in the shorts. And, you know, it's basically pillaging. It's legalized pillaging. And what they do is they bring you into a municipal court where only corporations appear. And there is no law against murdering, impounding, stealing from, lying about, or anything else regarding a corporation, because of course a corporation is a legal fiction and it can't be injured, right? Whereas a living man or woman can be injured, and we can bring claims of injurious harm. They just put us in a court where that's not possible, and then they bat us around like a mouse being batted about by a cat. And they operate these things privately. They do not go into a public court setting, although it takes place in the same place, the same space as a public court setting. It looks like a public court, but it's not. And if you ask them if it's on the record, they will answer, oh, of course it is. It's on their private court record. It's supposed to be on the public court record. When they're addressing members of the public especially, and they know that, but they just use all these little sophistries to avoid giving you good faith and service. Anyway, they throw you into this municipal court, and then they practice Roman civil law upon you and upon your estate, and they are really very, very blatant. I mean, they wink at each other, and they wave at each other, and they make little hand signals as if they were playing baseball. And they're just so arrogant that they think they can get away with this and that people are not going to pick up on what they're doing. However, we have picked up on what they're doing, and we know exactly what they're doing. And we are regularly bouncing their prosecuting attorneys and their judges off the bench and out there, getting them disbarred by the bar associations, because the bar associations realize that this kind of performance is just going to make it more and more apparent what they've been doing and getting away with for years, at which point their goose is going to be well and duly cooked. And so we're getting a lot of judges and a lot of prosecuting attorneys kicked off the bench now all across the country. One thing I wanted to say about that we discovered about affidavits. If you are studying an affidavit, it's a numbered witness statement, basically, where you go point one, you know, on Monday, April 5th, 1983, I was at the corner of Cushion Street and DeBar Street in downtown Delaware, you know, Ohio or whatever. Okay. And then you go to the next point and the next point and the next point. It's all bullet points and it's all very nice and clear and clean. And it's a way of telling the story in a brief and organized way. And so that's why affidavits are used, especially in maritime and admiralty cases. But they don't quite fit into a true civil case. They have to go into special maritime or special admiralty for that, which they do. And what we discovered is that if you're standing there as a living man or a living woman, you cannot offer an affidavit. If you are standing in your position on this land and soil, what you have to offer them is testimony in the form of an affidavit. Hmm. And that's because living people have a different nature than a person. And you have to remember that both of those things I just named off, maritime and admiralty, are in the realm of international law. And in international law, there are only two possibilities. You can be a lawful person standing on the land, giving testimony in the form of an affidavit, or you can be a legal person that is operating in the international jurisdiction of the sea, and you can give a straight affidavit. And the way that you title that is how you identify whether you are a lawful person on the land and soil or a legal person on the sea. And as it turns out, that has a lot to do with your standing in a case and whether or not you can get action on something. For example, the 60,000 affidavits that were filed against Governor Inslee. Lord knows he deserved that and more. But if they were just presented as affidavits, what is going to happen, that's going to come and land on his desk, and it's going to be one hell of a pile of paper. But he doesn't have to pay any attention. I mean, he does at the polls when he goes for re-election, if he's going to seek re-election. And he has to pay attention in terms of, oh, well, the Indians out there are on the warpath, or they might actually do something, right? But he's not obligated to take any action in response to his own employees, dependents, and other officers of the corporation sending him mad notes. It's like the CEO, you know, you can all get together and you can have your gripes and you can threaten a strike and all these other things. But unless it is coming at him from the right position, he's free to ignore it. So just that small change, testimony in the form of an affidavit, brings it within the federal court rules that the state of courts have to follow because they're all franchises, right? And that then zeroes in on the governor. That is telling him, okay, now you're dealing with legal, with lawful persons, and you're dealing with living people behind those lawful persons. And that gives you the standing to force him to a far greater degree than if you just leave it as a simple affidavit.
Okay.
And that's something we discovered about 2 years ago. And it was one of those thunderbolt moments when you're looking at something and you never really realized why the Federal Code of Civil Procedures says something the way that it does. And I think it was Rule 62 that really kind of lit us up about, you know, the difference between kinds of testimony and evidence. But anyway, that was something I just wanted to pass on in terms of, you know, putting more teeth into the whole affidavit process.
Okay. Well, if I may, let me just say, guys, I don't want to be the interviewer here. I'm going to be more like the traffic cop so that everybody gets a chance to weigh in, because Anna, you've said so much there that I do have a question. Then I want to go to Steve in case he has any response to what you said. And then we'll go to Paul and then back to James. But here's my question. When you talk about them taking money from our estate, $25,000 for a misdemeanor, $1 million for a felony. Are you talking about our fictional corporate person? Are you talking about the estate that's established, our corporation that is established by way of our birth certificates? Because let me just do a screen share. I did a terrible job introducing everybody. This is Anna's site, guys. I'm punching above my weight here. She knows more. She's probably forgotten more than I will ever know about this subject. So I'm really trying to learn along with all of you guys. But let me do another screen share and show you this. I think it was Paul that sent me this. Now, if you go to this website, gmeiutility.org, and you type in your social security number, you're going to be shocked at what you see, because I did that. And I was shocked by what I saw. Entities outside of the United States having some sort of claim on my social security number, bonds. I don't even know what this is, but it kind of freaked me out. Anna, is this what you're talking about? Just correct me where I've gone wrong here.
Not exactly. Your estate is separate from all that trading on labor performance bonds and labor contracts that these different companies are engaged in. What they're doing is they're trading a securitized interest in your labor and your estate. Okay, that's what GMI or GMEI is about. It's a utility that shows the trading, like a stock market.
Can I go back? I got to show this. I should have said this. It's very important. Look at this, guys. GMEI utility, a DTCC company. Guys, the DTCC is the registrar of all stocks. So when stocks get traded, billions and billions of shares a day, they all get settled by the DTCC, or they're supposed to. I did an interview with Bix Weir in which he said, no, the DTCC owns all of the stocks. Guys, this is so much bigger than I could have ever imagined when I had that conversation with Bix Weir. I didn't even know about this portion of the truth, which is completely held from us. Nobody knows about this stuff, Anna. I mean, your attachés do, your protégés do, but most people don't.
Well, basically, those are labor performance or labor force performance bonds that were put in place by the Miller Act. And it's just absolutely, it's outrageous what they've done. They've made us into, they've securitized our names and estates and used them as trading vehicles through clearinghouses. And those are basically glorified brokerages that have a clearinghouse section and oftentimes a bank section too. But these clearinghouses are for certificated securities. And this madness started in 1933, it was 1933, wasn't it? When Franklin Delano Roosevelt had his first inaugural address. And if you read his first inaugural address, you will see that he actually does mention clearinghouse certificates. And what he's doing is he's selling all of the municipal employees into slavery to the Pope. And these clearinghouse certificates are being used to securitize their names and estates. And over time, they simply expanded this to include anybody who got a social security number. So if you, quote unquote, applied for and enrolled and got a social security number, the legal presumption was not that you were an American that was applying for a social security number. For example, if you wanted to take a federal job for a number of years, the presumption was that you were a municipal citizen of the United States, otherwise recognizable as a 14th Amendment citizen, and that you were responsible for paying war reparations going back to the Civil War, and that you were accepting all debts of the United States, and that you were standing as a secondary to the United States' borrowing, that you and your estate were there to back the United States in its borrowing. So that's how you all became co-signers on their loans and on their bills. And that's how you became snookered into this wonderful thing that's happening on April 15th. So that's, you know, and then they sold labor bonds on all these children that were orphans. That was their story. We were all orphans and we were all donated by our mothers as wards of the state. And that's how the queen got her hooks in us. And then she took title to us. She claimed that instead of our surnames being surnames, they were quote unquote last names, which is a label they just made up out of thin air. And that became her title by claiming that these were not surnames, not family names, but last names, their descriptive title. See, they come up with a label. They come up with a new verbiage. And so they took us out of our natural setting and our natural identity. They unlawfully converted our identity. They impersonated us and named these corporations, these municipal corporations, after us. And then they just traded the labor interest and the estate interest as a commodity on the stock market, a securitized commodity on the stock market, which is all illegal as hell. It's also unlawful. But they got away with it because nobody complained. If you don't complain in the commercial world, you acquiesce.
If I may, Sean?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, I wanted to add something real quick to what Anna was talking about. 1933, I also believe, is the year that FDR rolled out and put in place the birth certificate bond fraud, the current birth certificate system that we have, where it was put on paper. And so every birth certificate is actually evidence, which with each person along the path signing to traffic you on paper into other jurisdictions. So they're all guilty of human trafficking, and that is the evidence. And it's done on bonded paper because it's a bond that then gets sent forward to the municipal to add you to this whole system, the original one, even before the Social Security. So you can put your birth certificate in that utility as well with the dash in the number. And of course, bond is the root word of bondage.
Yep.
Okay.
And of course, all that is put up as collateral, started by FDR. Everybody thinks he's such a great man. He was one of the most evil men in all of history. He put everyone up as collateral, his own people, through the birth certificate documentation as collateral against the national debt. And I realized that the World Bank and the IMF wasn't set up until the 40s, but the forerunners of that, the people behind that, all the same players, that's who started all this. And then, of course, later on, they came up and put in place what they were already doing behind the scenes with the World Bank and the IMF.
Maybe that explains to some extent why they can roll out a bioweapon masquerading as a vaccine and just start to call the population, because they claim they own us. Okay, we don't have human rights because we're owned by them, they say.
Right, and as Anna's pointed out in our many, many articles, is that we're the priority creditors, and they are trying to get rid of us by killing us, just like they did in World War II. They have a war once in a while to kill off their priority creditors and to cash in your bonds, so to cash in your chips, because guess who's the beneficiary if you don't claim it during your lifetime? They are.
They are.
Okay, so how do you opt out of this criminal system? I've had a conversation, Paul, with you in the past, and I believe you say you need to change your status and get on the land and soil. Is that correct? How does one do that? And Steve, is that enough? Do you have anything to say about any of this, Steve? But Paul, is that how you do it? How do you change your status and get on the land and soil?
Well, if you use that link I sent you to come over to the TASA site that shows all the states, would you show that, please?
Friends, thank you so very much for tuning in to the SGT Report podcast. This is a perfect time for a quick break. For years now, people have been setting up a little contest between crypto and gold, but that's like comparing a truck with an SUV. Both carry stuff and travel from A to B, but they do different jobs. Gold's job is to keep the value of your money safe and preserve its value. And since the events in Ukraine and the oil and inflation crisis, gold has done a brilliant job compared to stocks and other investments. So if you're worried about what's going on right now, and who isn't, just talk to an expert at Noble Gold about precious metals IRAs for your retirement. They'll get you straightened out on your options and hold your hand through the entire process. And this month, for any qualified IRA, you'll get an incredible 3-ounce silver American Virtue coin completely free as a thank you. Call 877-646-5347 right now to find out more, or visit noblegoldinvestments.com.
Would you show that, please?
I don't have that here. I'll do
it's in the chat. It's in the chat.
Well, while you're searching, Sean, this is a history lesson that, I think everybody's heard, or anybody on this side of the spectrum, I guess, has heard about, you know, the straw man and this bond account. It's probably provably true. But has any of you accessed that bond? Has anybody successfully accessed it? Like, are they sitting in multi-million dollar mansions? Is that true? I mean, why pursue it if you can't actually access it? Is my big question.
Need a bank to do that. Anna's got that covered.
Have you done it?
They bonded you, just like a bail bondsman bonds you in the court, right? So everybody thinks, oh, this bond is mine, like a savings bond. No, it's not. It's a bond that's placed on you to ensure your performance. It's a performance bond. And so it isn't yours. It belongs to the Pope. And it's paid out in gold at the time of your birth, whatever your birth weight is. And in order to be free in their system, if you really were a municipal citizen of the United States, you would have to pay the Pope back that entire amount in gold to buy your freedom, because otherwise you are assumed to be a municipal slave. Now, if you look back in history, you will see that the 14th Amendment was passed very quickly after the 13th Amendment, supposedly abolishing slavery in this country. However, what was abolished was private slave ownership. Public slave ownership was alive and well in the municipal government. And that's why FDR, as president of the municipal corporation, could make this big move during his first inaugural address and literally enslave the municipal citizenry.
I understand that, and it even goes back further than that with Pope Boniface in 1302 with the Unum Sanctum, where he declared all souls lost at sea and now they're property of the Holy See. So I get all that, I do, but I don't understand how changing your status or what that actually does for you, because it doesn't do anything for you inside the system. And James will back me up on this. You can't find any kind of case law or anything like that that does that. I mean, you can read through American jurisprudence all day long and find it very men and women centric against the government, where it sides with them all day long. But you can't find anything about anybody that has effectively argued this, gotten control of this, or effectively changed their status, and it changed you as a person inside the system, so the system no longer messes with you.
The Democrats,
I mean,
do
same
it
with
the
American State and National.
Well, actually, Steve, the answer to that is that everyone alive today for the last 160 years, everyone who knows how the land and soil jurisdiction was set up and is supposed to work, they're all long dead. So everything you're talking about when you talk about inside the system, the whole point is stepping outside of the system. If you're inside the system, then you're a U.S. citizen, you're a citizen of their corporation, and they can do what they want with you. The CEO comes out and tells all the citizenry, the employees, to do what he wants them to do, and then you're obligated to under statutory law. When you step outside the system, I mean, I'm an American State and National. Statutory law doesn't apply to me. I'm the monkey with the banana, okay? And what they do with, and the reason I use that analogy is because it has to do with the five monkeys experiment. And so that's what they treat people with, is as if they're the monkeys. And so they deny four of the monkeys the banana, and then finally the fifth monkey gets the banana, and the rest of them beat the monkey to death to get, because he has got something they don't. But here on the land and soil, we don't do that, and we don't advocate that. We say, you know what, let me teach you how to get a banana. And then once you get out of the system, you're not even in their jurisdiction. Did you realize that if they try to act upon you outside their jurisdiction, according to their own statutory laws, mind you, we don't obey their statutory law. We're not beholden to them, but they are. If they act outside their jurisdiction against you, they become personally liable. So a cop on the street who wants to act upon you after being duly notified that you're not in his jurisdiction, he loses the badge and becomes personally liable for doing anything to you. Same with the courts, same with the Bar Association attorneys. And by the way, Bar Association is the British accredited registry, which means they're all unfair declared British agents. which means all the attorneys are treason, or they're traitors, in my opinion. That makes them all traitors.
Steve, why don't you reply to that and give us your thoughts, and then we'll let Anna reply to whatever you say, because I have a couple of questions myself.
Well, I mean, you're referring to the Sovereign Immunities Act. Yeah, we all know what the lawyers do and what they are in the bar and all that stuff. But what I'm saying is I want remedy inside that system. I can do the same thing as you guys can do and use that system to work and force it to work based on their own rules. And so can James. James, I know, is confident the bit to chime in here, because they have a lot of rules to follow that they don't. And we can nail them on that all day long. And I've got a list of guys that are doing this all over the country. James is one of them. Myself is another. Steve Emerson down in Florida. Alphonse. I mean, we're using the system how it's supposed to be used. Randy Kelton got the governor of Texas to back off all his COVID restrictions with a 150-page criminal complaint, and then 20 states followed suit. We're getting remedy inside the system, and it's working, and people are getting paid for it. Why remove yourself from a system that was built for you, that you have all the remedy in the world from? You can learn it and make it work for you.
Steve, it's a foreign system, and quite frankly, you can beat them over the head with their own laws standing outside their system. They just can't come after you. So no one's saying don't go after them, but they can't come after you if you're not a corporation anymore under their thumb. You see the difference?
I can do that on paper. I don't have to change my status.
Well,
I declare on paper in a court record, and they can't change anything. The burden of proof is on them to prove that they own me. Is anybody going to come into open court and say, yeah, I own you, I can do whatever you want me? No, they're not.
No, I understand that. You can litigate it on the fly, but guess what? Most average people don't know how to litigate it on the fly. And so if they go into court with a superior body of evidence by having changed their status, that's what's going to, that, you know, that's what Anna advocates. And that's what's going to save most people's bacon. You know, I mean, you've had to learn a lot, I'm sure, from a year or two ago. Christopher James has had to learn a lot from a year or two ago. And if a person can successfully litigate from a common law position and force them to recognize that common law and constitution is a superior position over statutory law, then, you know, more power to you. That's great. However, the average person isn't going to do that. And you can still change your status and get solidly into common law and constitution. And then you demand that the courts on the lower level, which are not constitutional courts in their system, they must abide by constitutional courts. So you challenge jurisdiction and then ask them if they're acting under oath, all that stuff. Now, I haven't been there. I'll be real upfront with you. However, I'm just saying is you can still use their rules against them. But you can protect the average person can protect themselves by changing their status. I'm sure Anna's got more to add to that, but that's just my understanding. Anna?
Okay, guys, here's what I responded to, or what I kind of reacted to, was the idea that this system was designed for you. It wasn't. It was designed for U.S. citizens. And there is a difference between being an American and being a U.S. citizen. And there's also a difference in government involved here. The American government has three branches. They are the Union, the Federation of States, and the Confederation of States. Now, the Confederation of States has not been in operation since the 1860s. So a third of the American government has been inoperable since the 1860s, okay? Then you have the US government, and they are our subcontractors. They are under contract and agreements called constitutions. Constitutions are debt agreements where one party contracts for services and guarantees payment to other parties who guarantee to perform the services as stipulated, okay? So you have three constitutions, you have three federal subcontractors, and they are the Federal Republic, the territorial government, which is British, and you have the municipal government, which is run by the Pope. Okay, they were all subcontractors performing different services. And it says so right in Article 4 of the Constitutions, all three of them. So you have a federal federal constitution from 1787, you have a territorial constitution from 1789, and you have a municipal constitution from 1790. And they all have slightly different names, and they all apply to different federal subcontractors. Now, I remember I told you the Confederation has not been functioning since 1860s. Well, that took a third of the American government out of play. At the same time, when the Confederation stopped functioning, the Federal Republic, which was the American subcontractor, also stopped working, because the Confederation is what operated the Federal Republic. So one third of the American government went offline, and one third of the US government operated by Americans went offline. What remains are the Union states and the Federation states of the American government, and the territorial and municipal subcontractors of the federal government, what we call the federal government. That's what was still standing in 1865. And that has been what's standing ever since. Just those two thirds of each government. We've been running a 8-cylinder car on 4 cylinders, you know. We just haven't had a large segment of our government, especially the American-controlled government, in play since the 1860s. The Reconstruction never happened. It was never completed. And the books show that it was never completed. So here we are, limping along on 4 cylinders. The federal subcontractors that were left, the Brits and the Pope, didn't tell us what was going on. They just went ahead and usurped into the void left by the exit of the American federal subcontractor, the Federal Republic, and took over all those duties on a quote-unquote emergency basis, and they moved right in here and started running our government for us. And they've been doing it ever since. And we've been sleeping on, not even noticing, thinking everything was all taken care of. And they've been pillaging and just having themselves a rip-roaring good time. And they've done this by incorporating and foisting off the duty onto a commercial corporation in the business of providing governmental services.
Yeah.
And that in itself is illegal. Because when you have a contract with somebody, you either do the contract or you have to renegotiate the contract.
Well, can I ask a question, guys? Let me just jump in because, you know, I had Payman Matahide on. Livefreenow.org is his website. And he's all about opting out in terms of the IRS, no longer paying taxes. He says 99% of the population is not required to pay tax because we're not residents of the District of Columbia. I want to talk about that a little bit, but James, I know you haven't had a chance to talk at all. Do you want to jump in here? Do you have anything you wanted to say?
Yeah, I do. Thank you, Sean, for having me on. And by the way, it's a great privilege to be with all of you. And I've followed your works for quite a while. You know, Steve and I go back, and Paul, this is the first time I've met you. And you know, Sean, I mentioned that my journey with where I'm at here started because of the show that you did with Alphonse and with Crow 777. So just a couple of things that come to mind. So I have the privilege in my day job of being able to work with law enforcement across the country. And an issue, a big issue, as I'm sure Paul and Anna will tell you, is that they are horribly inadequately trained when it comes to dealing with individuals who have opted out of the system. So I am not discrediting by any means what Anna and Paul are saying, but I like to keep an open mind. So for me, if it makes sense, if it sounds plausible, then I want to do my research and I want to see where can I look back in history, either in written law or in acts or in executive orders or whatever the case may be, can I find something that's plausible to back that up? And there's plenty of things. And honestly, we don't have enough, that much time to debate all that stuff on this call. So what I would say is it's a choice. It's a personal choice. And I'm sure Anna will agree with that. And Paul, I imagine you would agree too. It's everyone's choice. If there's one thing that God granted us, you know, but by full disclosure, I'm a Christian, so I believe in God. So if there's one thing that God granted us, it's the right to choose.
The blessings of free will, brother.
That's clear as day. The founders of this country were very clear with that. I mean, we hold these truths to be self-evident. It's just like, duh, everybody just knows this. And that's where they started from. And then we go to where we are today. There's no doubt in my mind that the government, and I say the government because it's supposed to be an it, right? It's supposed to be, I mean, look back at some of the letters that were written by our founding fathers, and even by the most influential people at that time were not the founding fathers, it was the founding mothers. Look to Sam Adams' wife, look to Elizabeth Powell. These are some very influential women in our history that are very rarely mentioned because they had so much influence, but at the time it wasn't considered kosher. So you look at how they structured their sentences, and words have meaning. Steve will agree with me on this. Words have meaning. So when the everyday man or woman gets dragged into one of these municipal courts and they're up there standing before this guy in a black robe, and that they're assuming, there's that word, assume. We all know the definition of that word. They're assuming that they have to be there. They're assuming that this is a court of law. But when in reality, if they just took a step back and if they read the statute that they're being charged under, they would realize, well, hold up. It says here, if a person does this or if a person does that. Well, then in the definitions of the law, it says a person is a natural person, a corporation, an entity, an association, a bankruptcy and trust. And it's not either or. There's no man or woman in that statement anywhere. It's an all or nothing. So then I go back to it, go, okay, for me, the burden of proof is on the moving party. All right, Mr. Prosecutor, Mr. Liar, as I call you, capital L-I-E, lowercase y-e-r, Mr. Liar. Burden of proof is on you. Prove to me and to this court that I am a person according to that statutory definition. I'm raising my hand and I'm bringing what's called a threshold issue. I am challenging your jurisdiction right here, right now. And until you can prove that, you can go no further. Now, if you do, just like you mentioned, Paul, all bets are off. They've lost qualified immunity. You can sue them personally and officially at that point. And I'm doing that right now. I've got lawsuits moving through the federal court for a man here who was, his rights were violated. His right to access a public building was violated. They slapped him with a citation. We went through the kangaroo court, as Alphonse calls it, because that's exactly what it is. They railroaded him all the way through. And he's going to see about a $10 million judgment as a result of it. And we haven't done anything different.
And if I may address one of your points in the middle here, James, I don't want to cut you off by any means, but you said something very important when somebody can go into a courtroom and can challenge that, right? The average person goes into a courtroom and they say, is this your name? And they'll say, yeah, that's me. Boom. They've just gotten them to do a classic little tricky argument that their name in all caps, which is a dead corporate entity, and proves them to be a person because it came out of their own mouth. Okay, so now that threshold that you just described is gotten over. Same thing on the street. A cop stops you and says, you're the driver of this motor vehicle. I mean, they get you to admit you're a driver of a motor vehicle. And if you look those definitions up in Black's Law Dictionary, a driver is a traveler with the intent of using the public highways for commerce. And a motor vehicle is a automobile used for commerce, right in the definition book. We're not taught that in Webster's. A resident is also a resident of DC who is in the local area for the purpose of doing commerce. That's in the definition. Even mandate. mandate is in Webster's, it's something you have to do. But in Black's Law Dictionary, it's something you have to do. Only upon consent does it become an obligation. So these things are buried in the definitions. And when they get people to admit this stuff, they think they're saying one thing and they're actually are saying another, legally speaking. So the whole point for, in my opinion, I mean, if you can litigate that on the fly and you're comfortable with the system, by all means, that's your right. You're a sovereign in our view. And so you want to do that, that's fine. That's great. But most people can't, they don't even know what's going on. And I've, from what I've seen of the people we've invited on the Land and Soil and taught them, is they go on this journey of education. And one of the first things I ask people to do is use the Black's Law Dictionary and compare that to Webster's and compare that to the Land Jurisdiction Dictionary, the Bouvier's Dictionary, and learn the language. Because when they understand what what's being said to them and what they're saying, they can change all that. And when people look at changing their status, they learn all this stuff. Because I don't want somebody to change their status unless they understand what they're doing and why. And, you know, one of my sayings is know who you are and where you stand and know who you're dealing with in all things. So, you know, someone like you who's been steeped in law enforcement and you know all this stuff, you know, you're a leg above somebody who's just the average Joe. So anyway, that caveat, I don't want to run too far with that, but that's just what I wanted to inject there, because we're saying the same things. And, you know, we have a land jurisdiction way of saying it and you have a sea jurisdiction way of saying it. But you know, if you know what to say, you can work the system. But most people don't. In the system, even the defending attorney is going to get a cut of what he can fleece out of you. And that's where plea bargaining comes in.
Can I ask a question? Well, I just wanted to ask a question, guys, and maybe you can give me an example of what kind of law, what kind of case we're talking about here. Because for the audience, I just want to be really clear. This whole conversation is about us regaining our liberty, breaking free from a system which is overtly criminal, corporate, and does not represent we the people. So when we talk about going into a court and saying, and they say, hey, is this you? And your name is in all caps. And you say, yeah, that's me. Okay. Breaking out of that system in the ways that were just described by Paul and James, you're not going to have protection if you're charged criminally because you were drunk driving and you accidentally killed somebody and now you're facing 10 years in prison. That's not what we're talking about here. If you guys think I'm wrong on that, correct me. What we're talking about here, to me, a better case situation would be, I have opted out of this criminal system and I've decided that I will no longer file my federal income taxes to the IRS because I am not beholden to do so. I am a free man on the land and soil and I'm opting out. Mm-hmm. That's a better example, right? I just don't want to muddy the waters about criminal court. Anna, am I right? Am I wrong?
Well, yeah, political status isn't a criminal issue. Political status is a free will issue. My problem with what they've been doing is that they don't give people full disclosure about the various political statuses. The political statuses were built into the settlement of the War of Independence. You could be an American, you could be a British territorial, or you could be a municipal citizen. And this was to keep the peace so that the Tories could continue to be British subjects if they wanted to. And the municipal citizenry could continue to live under the laws of the Catholic Church. The municipal government is a theocracy. So the Catholics who felt very strongly about this could choose to be municipal citizens of the United States. And this was set up to accommodate the foreign subcontractors and their people, okay? So you've got a multitude of different political statuses you can adopt. And you can serve different governments and levels of government and still be perfectly at peace, okay? You could make those choices, but you can only make those choices if you know that they exist, right? And they don't give you a choice. They don't disclose anything about this. They just make legal presumptions about who you are and what you're doing here and what your political status is. And then they bat you around according to those legal presumptions instead of you having a clear, open ability to choose your political status. And that's where I come unglued. That's where I, you know, I start filing my teeth in the morning, because they don't have a right to foist their political status on me any more than I have a right to foist my political status on them. And the peace very much depends upon everybody knowing what the political status options are and making intelligent choices accordingly. Now, if you want to go into the military, you're going to be a U.S. territorial citizen. When you sign that enrollment form and you sign up to go into the service for a tour of duty, you are now officially crossing the border into federal jurisdiction, and you are signing up with a British Crown Corporation. And you're going to be under their law, and you're going to be subject to them for the entire tour of duty. And if you're not damn careful, you're going to be under their thumb for the rest of your life. Because if you're an officer and you don't return your commission, you stay in federal servitude and status. If you are an enlisted man and you don't turn over a letter to the head of your branch of service and say, "Hi, I'm returning to my birthright political status as an American. Great serving with you. Bye." Well, then the presumption remains that you are forever afterward a U.S. territorial citizen, a subject of the Queen, and are operating under the federal code, what we call the federal code, right? So you're placing yourself under statutory law, but you don't know this. You are not given full disclosure. And so you are doing all this stuff to yourself, and they will very handily say, "Well, he did it himself. He signed the document, right? He did this. We're not at fault." But they are at fault because they aren't giving you disclosure.
If I may, Sean.
Yeah, if I may, look, I got to ask a question here because my brain hurts. I'm trying so hard to understand all of this stuff and that. Guys, funny, I just nuked the entire call. I went to hit screen share and instead I hit end meeting totally by accident. So we're waiting for Steve to hop back on. Here he is.
And I do have an answer for your question too, Sean. So.
Okay, very good. Thank you, Steve. If you can hear us, that was my bad. Thanks for jumping back on, Steve. Here's what I was trying to show. Hey guys, so I figure we might as well leave it there. We go on for at least another hour, and since I accidentally nuked the call, well, we're gonna release this thing in two parts. It's easier to digest all this information that way, I think. So stay tuned for part two. Thanks so much for tuning in, friends. And for real news, visit us directly at sgtreport.com.
If our military succeeds in harming those people of conscience, those people who are loyal to the Constitution in the way they're doing, there is no defense for the rest of us. It's our duty as citizens to help stand in the gap and support our military in this very dangerous environment. It is Stalinistic.